AM 570 LA Sports.
I want to hear it, man. I'm desperate to hear it.
This is the Petros and Money Show.
Best case scenario.
Mad Money Smith.
Worst case scenario.
Petros Papadakis.
What am I doing here? I'm humiliated.
Available on the iHeartRadio app.
Now online at am570lasports.com.
This is Petros and Money.
Andrew's me. Feelings what you leave. Now and forever. What you want? You die. Small price.
Now and forever.
Trosted Money, AM 570 LA Sports, a full 4-hour show today. David Bassett going to be along in an hour, less than an hour, as a matter of fact, for off-season Dodger talk as we approach spring training coming up on us a lot quicker than you would think, just a month away. And you'll be able to listen to every Dodger game here on AM 570, stream it live through the iHeartRadio app.
It's always like that for the team that wins the World Series, though.
Yeah.
88 is 88 and out the gate.
There is joy in Mudville.
Tears,
you know,
of joy.
I let them flow.
Woo!
Tonight, 7 p.m., David Vassay, Dodger Talk.
Tonight, there is joy in Mudville.
There is, because it's going to be a lot of Turner talk now that DJ LeMahieu has signed with the New York Yankees. So, again, that is 1 hour from now. Remember, tomorrow, starting at 7:15 a.m. on Dan Patrick, it will be an opportunity for you to win $1,000 and put a grand in your hand every single hour, starting at 7:15. We stopped at 4:15. But, of course, quarter past, 20 past is when you hear the code word and you text it to 200-200. Listen for your phone because you'll have to answer a number you don't recognize. You'll have to answer your phone when a number you don't recognize phones you. And that's how you win the $1,000.
And remember to stream the show. The Noir Corner, Daniel Jeremiah, our MLK history lesson, the talk from the Australian Open, all of it can be streamed on the iHeartRadio app for your smartphone. Podcast it or stream the show live, just like every Dodger game, with Dodger talk coming up at the end of this hour. But right now, it is time for the final hour fun facts.
It's fun in effect. It's the hour three.
Fun facts. Fun fact.
Did you know the Mayflower's voyage ended in Plymouth instead of its intended Virginia colony destination? Because Captain Jones, doing the math of 1 gallon per day per person, recognized pilgrims were going to run out of beer if they kept going. So Plymouth it was.
But we can't have that.
Can't have that. We're going to run out of beer, so we're stopping here.
I knew a guy from Plymouth, like, and he was like right out of
the direct descendant.
Oh, I mean, but he was, you know, Packy at the Chaz at 6L. Like, yeah, 6L. He was, they'd never leave the town. Like, he sounded.
Narragansett beer.
Oh, he was unbelievable. He really was. And he was from The Rock.
It's a good beer.
I'm from The Rock. I mean, they really, and nobody leaves The Rock.
No.
I mean, you think nobody leaves a town.
But The Rock.
He was friends with Brooks Melchior, that guy from Plymouth. That's all I'm saying. All right.
I believe that's where he brought the Eastern European models in, just to kind of let them recognize through the history Plymouth. Of America. I'm going to bring you through Plymouth Rock.
Oh, yeah.
So before I put these bikinis on,
well,
you,
first,
your giant,
before you get your bikini, you have to wear the bonnet.
Eastern European breasts will be displayed.
You have to show,
exactly,
just like the Mayflower. It was actually really, actually very endearing.
We're going to disguise them in traditional garb and then just release them to the masses.
It's time for the quick hits, everybody.
The PMS quick hits. Come make it quick, y'all. Oh, yeah!
We will have more with Eric Williams on the Chargers hiring Brandon Staley as their new head coach. And we will have Brandon Staley on later in the week, along with Tom Telesco and everything Charger-related with this new hire, a young, up-and-coming defensive coach that
Chargers!
A lot of people excited.
Are excited about. Some skeptical.
Chargers.
We'll see how it shakes out. The NFL has granted teams permission to conduct virtual interviews for head coaching vacancies with candidates who are still alive in the playoffs.
That would be the Eric Bieniemy rule. A lot of people suggesting that because the Chiefs made a run to the Super Bowl last year.
Is it going to be okay with Andy Reid, though?
And this year.
Is it going to be okay with Andy Reid?
I believe Andy Reid seems to be out there in the media encouraging one lucky team to hire his offensive coordinator for the past few years. So this is in, I believe, response to some saying disadvantage for Eric Bieniemy because these teams want to get their guys hired, their staffs filled out, and you can't hire a guy when his team's still in the playoffs.
Well, Daboll is going to stay with the Bills now that the Chargers' job has been filled. Houston is going to do a virtual interview with Eric Bieniemy, the Kansas City OC that we just talked about. And the run game coordinator, another coaching news from the 49ers, has been promoted to the offensive coordinator position. Mike McDaniel will now be the guy to take orders from Shanahan.
Shannon Farron, very excited about the Mike McDaniel hire. She said, you know what? If Mike LaFleur is going to leave, it better be old Mac that gets the promotion to OC.
Well,
I'm
going to
be pissed.
Between the excitement about McDaniel and Staley, a couple of young white guys getting jobs, Shannon's going to need a defibrillator because that's a lot of excitement. I don't want it to blow her up.
No, we don't want that for sure.
Buccaneers versus Packers, NFC Championship game. No lines.
Foosball.
No lines, Cates. Bills Chiefs in the AFC Championship game.
Now, what the hell, Cates?
We got both games on AM 1150 beginning at noon on Sunday on the Patriots.
Double up.
To the NBA, where the Lakers, now 11-3, will play host to the Golden State Warriors tonight on Spectrum Sports TV. Our friend Geeter will have pre, half, and post coverage there.
Slathering coverage. Of a great team.
Just wait till the Warriors win big.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Warriors big.
Clippers are right on their tail at 10-4. They host the Sacramento Kings on Wednesday, 6 o'clock pre. We told you about that a bunch of times.
Man, Paul George, he is on a revenge tour. Tune in, Clippers basketball. George with a huge jam sending message to the league that he ain't taking ass this year.
They felt that all the way in Portland.
You better come after PG at your own peril.
You better come correct if you're coming for PG.
Luke Kennard shooting at a sweet clip.
Game of his life.
Actually is shooting at a sweet clip these days.
You know, he's a lot better than that Shamit, just like Don McLean told us.
And Shamit's weird looking.
That shouldn't factor in.
No.
Well, Kennard.
Pinard's weird looking,
he's no
too.
Beauty.
No, he's got the bangs thing going.
He's not good looking like us.
No.
UCLA, we
Who
talked
is?
All about them. They're number 20 in the coaches poll. They got the Bay Area swoop this weekend, and we will talk about it as it continues. And the Clay Travis versus Joel Klatt head-to-head fight is over again.
Oh, another round.
Yeah, wow. Shiano's not going to get hired this time. The University of Tennessee is
you
fired.
You called a couple of them Rutgers games. They should hire Shiano.
They did. And he actually was pretty good.
That's what I mean. Tennessee should have hired him.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I didn't call a Rutgers game this year. One Rutgers game last year. And, man, they were bad. And they fired the coach like the next week. Chris Ash.
To ashes his career. Shiano came in. I think they won the Big Ten.
They didn't do bad.
No.
Shiano, immediate respectability. But Clay Travis and Joel Klatt, they just couldn't see eye to eye on that. Phil Fulmer's going to be gone, too.
You tried to trash that man's career. You tried to take away his livelihood. You proud of yourself? You proud of that mob you loved, Clay? Proud of that?
That was an unbelievable display on both sides of self-importance.
Yes.
I mean, it was an unbelievable chest-to-chest self-importance matchup for the ages.
Because there's a long line of people waiting to hire Greg Schiano, Joel. It was a good one.
It got ugly.
It really did.
And hey, maybe Schiano's not that great of a dude, but seems like he knows how to build a college football program. Just seems that way.
A lot better than old Jeremy Pruitt.
Speaking of the swaggy-ass Padres, Matt, maybe Pruitt's going to go down there and be the clubby. They are in agreement on a deal to acquire Joe Musgrove from Pittsburgh. Padres sending five players back to the Buccos.
Jeez.
Musgrove was a one-time prospect for the Stros. Pitched for the Pirates the last 2 years. He's another arm for the Padres rotation. And their formidability is growing as Daniel Jeremiah's chest swells in Temecula.
Musgrove. When Mookie Betts gets in the box, it's going to be a Musgrove.
I heard on the
I thought that was a good one.
I heard on the Padres podcast that Musgrove is a must-have for this Padres rotation. Hey, I love your sister Casey. She's a great country singer.
Was that the one your dad liked?
Shut up, Casey Musgrave, not Musgrove.
Who was the idol that your dad always used to talk about? It was like season two.
The hippie chick.
Yes. Was that not Musgrove?
No, Rachel Musgrave is a... I mean, Casey Musgrave is a star.
Was she the one that
Blake
Shelton?
Do you know about
Shelton?
Casey Musgrave?
Was she the one that Blake Shelton hooked up with?
He did hook up.
There was like some reality
TV. Yeah, he hooked
TV.
Up with an Oklahoman, yes. An Oklahoman star, a hot country vixen. Damn, we don't know enough country.
Nah, we don't. No, just well, enough I do to make know no that, sense on the radio. I hey, do, what about that one thing over there?
The
with
girl
that, dude?
That Shelton left. Blake Shelton left for Gwyneth.
For Gwen Stefani.
Gwen Stefani.
But he had hooked up with some young tart.
Right. And now
who
I
was
saw
his wife, Trish, or
Miranda Lambert.
Miranda Lambert.
She now has a new boy toy.
Well, she got all hot. She lost like 30 pounds and was like, check out my ass.
She put them back. Put the pounds back.
She put them back on her new boy toy.
If that happens.
She's warming them up. And Matt, of course, we are your hockey show of record.
The Kings have now experienced back-to-back heartbreaking losses in overtime. And will try to get off the schneid and their 0-2 record as they host the Colorado Avalanche tomorrow night, 7 p.m. They'll drop the puck. Remember, there was only one place to listen to Kings hockey, and that is on their own channel on the iHeartRadio app. Just download it. It's free. And if you're listening to PMS right now on the iHeartRadio app, just search LA Kings and enjoy some live puck tomorrow night. Kings Avs, 7 p.m. tomorrow.
Coming up next, great information on the NFL, our local teams, from our friend Eric Williams.
The home of the Dodgers.
Some might say obsessive with winning.
Dodger baseball.
AM 570.
LA Sports.
Everybody, what's cracking? It's an I'm a Horse Monday on PMS, galloping and trotting into the next week of great sports talk as we
great sports talk
push forward tonight. In just about a half an hour or so, David Vasse will be along with Dodger Talk at 7 o'clock, and every Dodger game will be right here on AM 570 LA Sports. And listen to this show live, just like the Dodger games, on the iHeartRadio app. You can stream us there, too, on the iHeartRadio app for your smartphone. And joining us right now on the Chevy Silverado Celebrity Hotline, somebody to react to the big Chargers news, Matt, as they hire a coach who doesn't have to leave town.
Well, he is a man who wears many a hat, and he is one of our favorites, a dear friend of the show. You can follow him on Twitter at Eric with a C underscore D underscore Williams. He covers the Rams, covers the Lakers at Sports Illustrated, and for a long time, covered the Chargers. So can really weigh in on a host of things. We always appreciate it when he joins us on the Chevy Silverado Celebrity Hotline. Eric, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing good, money. Petros, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Myriad topics, like we said. So, Lee Zeidman, up or down?
I'll go down.
Oh!
We've been down for a long time, too.
Take it, Lee.
Where is
Take
Lee?
It. Yeah. Lee's going to call, and we're going to get after it. Lee's fun to talk to. No, we appreciate you joining us. We'll lay off the Lakers. Does this move surprise you, I guess, first and foremost? A lot of people thought it was going to be Daboll from Buffalo.
Yeah, I don't think I'm surprised. You know, Staley was a hot commodity. A lot of people were interested in bringing him in. He had already interviewed with the Chargers and Jets previously and then had the second interview with the Chargers. As we talked about earlier when I was on the air last time, there is that familiarity with Telesco and Staley with the John Carroll connection with Telesco having played there and Staley having served as a defensive coordinator there. Two stints, actually, and that was just 5 years ago. It just kind of shows you the rapid ascension that he's had, you know, from a Division III school as a D coordinator to where he's at now. So I thought it made some sense. I think it's interesting that this is the first defensive coordinator that Telesco has hired, you know, two offensive people previously, and Anthony Lynn and Mike McCoy. Interesting that, you know, no retreads, no former head coaches, although they did reach out to Jason Garrett. But the one thing I can say about Brandon, having been around him a lot, you know, covering the Rams, is he's smart, he's detailed, and players love to play for him. And so I think he'll bring that with him. And then, you know, we'll see what happens as a head coach, just because you don't know what's going to happen until the guy is actually in that position doing the job.
So many have, I shouldn't say so many, but some have described him as a Sean McVay on defense. Just the way he communicates, his personality, just how much football he consumes historically and in the moment. Is that fair, or is that just easy?
No, I think that's fair, and I think Sean McVay has said that himself. That was one of the attractions that he wanted to bring him in, because he seemed like kind of a football savant, you know, that was just all about football. Innovative, creative, outside of the box in terms of his thinking. And I think you saw that this season with the way that they used Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, the willingness to move Jalen Ramsey around a little bit, you know, instead of just kind of putting him outside as one of the best corners in the league. And then with Aaron Donald, moving him around the formation defensively, played a lot more defensive end this year, trying to find the best matchup, and then playing off those two chess pieces. And now it's kind of a numbers game. You can use the rest of those nine players defensively to figure out how to stop the rest of the offense.
And Staley did a great job doing just that. What is the general consensus, I guess, amongst NFL people about this guy being a Division III guy a few years back and not having that much experience at the pro level, kind of a meteoric rise when there were some other guys around that were a lot more, I guess, tenured in this league?
I think there's some healthy skepticism just based on other people that maybe had more experience that people would think is maybe more qualified for that position. And again, we talked about this. This probably was the top position going in just because of the quarterback, Justin Herbert. And then you look at the defensive pieces. It seems like a turnkey operation where you could go in and have success right away if the right guy is hired. So, yeah, I think there'll definitely be people kind of looking to see what kind of success Brandon has early, because, you know, maybe there were some people that were more qualified for that position when you look at some of the other candidates that were out there.
Don't know whether or not it'll come to fruition, but some people tying Kevin O'Connell to the offensive coordinator job. He's the OC with the Rams. I don't know if they have to give the Chargers permission, because he doesn't call plays, and I think if you don't call plays and you get play calling, then you can just leave. They consider it a higher-level gig. But what can you tell us, if anything, about him and what kind of fit that might be with Justin Herbert?
Similar to Staley, you know, a detailed-oriented guy, very precise. A guy that I think did a good job with Jared in terms of trying to get him to mature as a player, both in his skill set and the way that he sees the game. A guy that's bounced around a little bit too, was in Washington, obviously was a player in New England. And I think the key here is, I think they probably want somebody to come in and run that Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan offense, you know, zone read or zone running game paired with play action game. That's a lot of teams are having success with that. Obviously, most notably in Green Bay with Matt LaFleur there. So that might make some sense. And again, O'Connell's already in town, so it's pretty easy to move him right down the 405 to Costa Mesa.
What do you think they're going to do with Goff? Because it had to be a rough year for a dude getting paid that much to play quarterback. Where do they go from here? How do they kind of massage this situation, the Rams?
Yeah. I'm surprised it took that long to get the Goff, Petro.
Oh, come on. We're Charger Station. Matt's the voice of the Chargers.
Thanks, P.
I don't want to come in. You know, I started with the number one headline, Lee Zeidman, and then down to 1B. Which was the Chargers hire, and now we got to talk about baby hands Goff. What's popping with him?
I thought McVay's comments were pretty telling, both at the end of the game where, you know, you don't really have time to kind of step back, and he says, hey, he's our quarterback right now. And then, you know, you can kind of clean it up a little bit the next day, and he didn't really do that. He just kind of left it open and said, hey, we're evaluating every position, and you know, basically not ready to say that he's the guy going into next year. And that's pretty telling when that person is owed a little bit over $43 million in guaranteed money over the next two seasons. They seem really interested to see Wolford out there playing, both when he played against Arizona and led them to a win, and then to go ahead and go back. And even though, you know, to me, I think the most telling thing is Goff is suited up. He's healthy enough to play. But Wolford is starting in the playoff game. That kind of lets you know how they feel about Goff right now. So it'll be an interesting offseason. Are they going to add competition, you know, to the quarterback room to see if that can raise Goff's game? Do you try to move him, which it seems it would be hard to do based on the contract? I just think McVay looks around at the NFC West, Russell Wilson in Seattle, Kyler Murray in Arizona, Garoppolo in San Francisco. All those guys can move a little bit, and Goff just isn't that guy. He doesn't give you that added dimension as a quarterback that can run and get an escape. And that's really the way that the game is trending when you look at the top quarterbacks in the league. So it's going to be an interesting offseason.
Who's going to take the blame for it? Like, who's got to wear this? Because they paid him a whole bunch of money.
Well, I mean, you're looking at Les, and you're looking at the people that are in the front office that made that decision. And I'm assuming McVay was part of that decision.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times as an organization, when you draft somebody, you know, number one overall, you kind of want that person to work out. And the first couple years, you know, when they brought McVay in, seemed like it was working. You look at it now, it doesn't seem like it's working as well. Again, the one thing I'll say, and I mentioned this earlier when I was on, 26 years old, still pretty young, still pretty reliable in terms of the availability piece, is tough, you know, plays through pain. I think all those things are positive characteristics for Goff, but the bottom line is you have to win games in the league. And, you know, at times he struggled with that this season.
Players weren't hesitant to shower coaches with compliments, each other. You know, what a joy it is to play with Aaron Donald, with Jalen Ramsey. Robert Woods is always cited as one of the great guys in that locker room.
The heck daddy?
Maybe we're missing it. Same with Whitworth. Like, how do the players feel about Goff, the leader? Is he a good leader of this team?
They talk him up. I mean, he's a captain. I mean, you know, it would be nice to get those guys, I guess, in an honest moment when they're not in front of the media to see what they truly think about that individual. But certainly when you talk to them in those media sessions, they talk up Goff as a person that can make plays, that has made plays for them in the past, that helped lead them to a Super Bowl, that shows toughness, that shows grit, you know, dealing with a thumb injury. So players are generally supportive of Goff when you ask him those kinds of questions.
In terms of the relationship between he and Sean McVay, you know, he had kind of said, I think in his postseason call, you know, look, there's conflict, but there's communication, and that's how we get through it. Like, is their relationship good, or do those two have some things to sort out?
I think they probably have some things to sort out. Obviously, Jared was not happy that he wasn't playing in that Seattle game because he felt like he was healthy enough to play, showed that he was healthy enough to play, and was the starting quarterback and should get the opportunity to play in that game. And then he went in and he actually played pretty well against Seattle when Wolford got hurt and seemed to kind of validate that thinking going into the game. So there's definitely some things to be resolved. But, you know, healthy conflict, I think, is good. That's kind of one of Anthony Lynn's sayings, you know, that through that healthy conflict, you get intimacy. And so we'll see if they're able to gain more intimacy by having this conflict at the end of the season.
At the end of the day, as our boss says here, do you think the Rams had a good year? It feels like McVay coached his ass off, from my perspective, I guess.
Yeah, no, I had him going 10-6. They finished 10-6. And the fact that they're able to go to Seattle and win a playoff game against a team that a lot of people thought could compete for a Super Bowl, to me, I feel like it exceeded expectations. Getting back to the postseason, I think, was important. Winning a playoff game, I think you can build off of that. But you know how it is, Petros. You really have to have these playoff games at home if you're expecting to make any kind of Super Bowl run. You know, the Giants, you know, going through the wild card, or the Packers years ago going through the wild card. Those are the exception. The rule is look at the Patriots and what they've been able to accomplish over the years. Generally, it's a home game and a cold weather climate for them. You know, for the Rams, it would be in a dome at SoFi. But that's what you have to do. You have to win those games so that you win the NFC West and the playoffs kind of run through your home stadium.
Who are they going to bring in to be the D coordinator? Monty Kiffin? What?
I don't know if they're going to bring Monty in, man.
Come on, guys.
You go old, then you go young.
Tampa 2, baby.
Now we're going back to really old.
You know how it is.
So many people are running to Tampa 2 now.
Come on, no. Safety's deep. It's good.
Everywhere.
We're fine.
Well, yeah. Joe Barry's there. Joe Barry's been a defense coordinator in the past, so maybe that makes some sense.
Have you ever seen Joe Barry's USC tattoo on his calf?
I haven't seen that. Oh, I've heard about it.
It's there.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was 17, I knew that was a bad tattoo.
That's a discussion that you and Joe need to have.
I love Joe.
He just got a bad tattoo?
I love Joe.
He's a great guy. His, bad tattoo.
His father, Mike, once told me dead straight in the eye, said, "Hey, I'm sorry you're out there. I'm tired of hearing my bad. Tired of hearing I'm sorry. I'm sorry you're out there, you son of a bitch." Oh, Joe Barry. Who else were you saying? I'm sorry for interrupting. I'm sorry.
Aubrey Pleasant, their defensive backs coach, is another guy that should get a look. Has done a great job with that secondary. So two guys on the staff that might make some sense, and then we'll see if they look outside of the organization.
Well, we'll bookend it then, Eric, and get back to the Bolts. Which of those coaches do you think Staley would take with him? I'm sure McVay wouldn't be too excited about bringing this guy in for 1 year. He gets a head coaching job and then poaches a bunch of assistants to go with him.
Get Joe Barry.
One guy I think might make some sense is Mike Shula, their outside linebackers coach. Again, another guy that coached at John Carroll that Staley knows pretty well. Actually coached with the Chargers a couple years ago as a defensive assistant, so knows the organization and they know him. He might make some sense as a guy that could move over.
What a wonderful interview.
Eric_D_Williams on
Eric
Twitter.
Eric Williams, what a star on
Maybe
this show.
Maybe he's just going to have to be our Laker guy now moving forward.
We might have to. Especially because
awesome LeBron.
We like that good conflict.
Right. Double up.
As we always say, conflict leads to intimacy.
I appreciate the nod to Seattle with the Knicks loss.
That's right. Hey, maybe your old friend Anthony Lynn going to be up there as their offensive coordinator moving forward.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see him land back up there. That would make some sense because they had Tom Cable and Daryl Bevel together, run game coordinator and passing game coordinator. And obviously Anthony Lynn knows the running game, and maybe they bring somebody in as a passing game coordinator. So that would make some sense to kind of return to what was successful for them when Pete first got up there.
You know who's got a lot of personality is that Bevel. I mean, if he would be a stand-up comedian, if he wasn't a coach, that guy. All right, well, here, let's get my posse's on Broadway on the way out for Coach Lynn if he gets up there.
Yeah, that'd be good. I'm glad that Lynn's wanting to coach next year and not take a year off. I think he should jump back in.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Eric.
Oh, there it is.
Posse up.
Thank you, Eric.
Thank
you. Oh, turn it up, dude. Pete Carroll is the white guy. People think he's funny. From the 50 series tires, the Alpine's bumping, but I need the volume higher because the 808 kick drum makes a girlies get.
I mean, you have just got, you can date this thing between Alpine and 808.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. All right, well, this is 1988.
There was a time when a dirty bastard, if he was rolling with a stock stereo, he didn't have a chance.
No chance.
He didn't have a chance in
no
life.
Chance. The whole car was leaning back. Maharaji's watching TV with two girlies on his lap. That's why you would steal one. You couldn't afford it. You had to steal one.
I mean, you had
and
no
then you go
chance.
To the flea market and you get the harness.
If you had
pull
stock
out you stole
wheels and a stock stereo.
It was over. What the hell is that?
Who are you?
Well, you know, you just pull the button out to set the station. And then you just push this
push
one.
Push it up.
Moves the dial over.
We'll be right back with your Dead and Alive Guide birthday of the day.
Is that an Alpine? It's an Alpone. Not a flea market.
I'm really sophisticated. I got a Kenwood.
It's a Benwood. But it's blue.
You ever heard of Iowa with an A?
Mine's spelled I-O-W-A.
Petros and Money.
P-M-S.
With L.A. Sports. Now.
Huddle, everybody, and good night. Kalinita, the Petros and Money Show is mercifully coming to an end on AM 570 LA Sports, but we are live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app, and you can stream right until 8 o'clock right there on your local station, because coming up next, Matt, Dodger Talk with David Vasse and a hot time for the hot stove, and the season's supposed to pop off soon. Wow!
I mean, a month out. From spring training, that is how close we are to the baseball season.
Vaccinate the clubbies.
Exactly right. And the groundskeepers. Because you know what?
Well, they're outside.
You get holes out there, and you get some wiggle divots, room. And you get those blades turning the wrong way.
A little more wiggle room outside, Matt, but those clubbies are indoors.
Remember, you'll be able to listen to every Dodger game on AM 570 and stream it live on the iHeartRadio app when you are not near a radio. Dave will take your calls beginning, about 10, 15 minutes from now. 866-987 570.
He might take your calls. Tomorrow,
he loves it.
As the schedule goes, the LA Kings will host the Avalanche of Colorado. I don't think Joe Sakic's on the team anymore. They dropped the puck at 7. Listen to the games with Nick Oldonian and Darrell Evans.
Nick Oldonian?
Live on the LA Kings Audio Network and free on the iHeartRadio app. The schedule on Wednesday is Clippers at 6 and UCLA on Thursday, tip-off at 6. So great sports. We're running all the games on the station.
Great sports talk.
And I hope Dave takes calls at last Matt advertised, because Dodger talk is next.
How do you feel about that LeMahieu contract in New York and the leverage it now gives Justin Turner? I want to talk sports with you.
Okay, your dead guy birthday of the day today, Matt, is Greek news today.
Greek news.
Είναι πολύ δύσκολο να καταλάβουν οι άνθρωποι.
News. That is Greek.
Invented democracy, and we're the first people who, we think.
Now here's Petros Papadakis.
Well, as you know, Matt, we already are your bouzouki show of record, the pregnant Greek guitar, the bouzouki. And we know the guy who carries the torch of the bouzouki and rebetiko music in modern times. That's Babis Tsertos. We have celebrated here.
We are your Santos show of record.
Tsertos.
Santos.
Tsertos. There you go. But today, we celebrate the founder. If Tsertos is Mick Jagger, then this guy is Howling Wolf.
Is that right?
Or if Tsertos is Adam Levine, this guy is Mick Jagger.
Okay.
You know, Super Bowl's coming up. Think about Levine on that stage.
Sure. Well, I guess if we want to speak to the kids, with Super Bowl, 54 upon us? 55.
NFL Network right here.
If Tsertos is The Weeknd, then this guy...
It's Prince.
Is Prince.
Or Al Green.
Sure.
Reverend Al.
Works.
Vasilis, which is Bill. Tsitsanis. Tsitsanis. Chopped and screwed.
A little issue with the recording there.
106 years old today. Born in northern Greece, Vasilis, as a young man, played violin and mandolin. By 22, he learned the ways of the pregnant guitar of romance, the bouzouki. Some people find pregnant women very sexually attractive.
By someone you mean?
I'm just saying, well, I did until I actually lived with one, but that being said,
I'll break you with that one real quick.
Some guitar players find the bouzouki, the pregnant guitar,
the most attractive of all the string instruments.
They can't help it. He got famous by playing the bouzouki in the tavernas of Thessaloniki during the German occupation of Greece during World War II and far beyond. He became a Greek icon, got married in that wonderful town that I hope to visit one day. I've never been to Thessaloniki. Or Thessaloniki. It was Vasilis Tsitsanis who made the bouzouki music westernized and more palatable for larger audiences outside of Greece, shortening songs and cutting down on some of the church-like chanting.
That was a big mistake.
Yeah.
All but vanquished it from music forever.
He was close friends with the Greek prime minister, the three-time prime minister of Greece, Andrea Papandreou. Remember him?
That's a lot of vowels.
He was Andreas Papandreou was like the Greek prime minister like three times. Like he'd get voted out, and he'd spend a couple of years on the sideline boxing for the opposition, and then he'd come back in.
Put up a billboard. Remember me?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Papandreou, and he was a puzzo slinger. Papandreou was.
I could see that.
And he did. He outlived Vasili by 12 years. Vasili died after a lung operation in a London hospital.
Surgeries were different back then.
The 80s?
Yeah.
Matt, what do you got?
I have another musician. Happy 66th, one of our favorites.
You think he could find his way around the bazook?
Oh, yeah. Steve Earle. 100%.
Sure.
100%. Country rock, folk singer, songwriter.
If you can see past his giant gullet.
Listen, gained a little bit of weight in his later years.
I mean, that's a gullet.
San Antonio.
I mean, trust me, I know what it's like.
Chances are you know him best for covering the Tom Waits song, Way Down in the Hole, which became the theme song from The Wire. Earl regularly cited as a musician's musician. A whole mess of his songs have been recorded by the likes of Willie Nelson, Levon Helm, Johnny Cash, Waylon Jennings, to name a few, because he got a start in publishing. He was just a staff songwriter in Nashville. Give me one of my favorites there, Katesy. Steve's Hammer, one of my all-time favorite Steve Earle songs. Born in Fort Monroe, Virginia. Pops an air traffic controller. Moved to Texas when he was a wee lad. Grew up in San Antonio. Ran away from home at 14. Specifically to find Towns Van Zandt.
Yeah, he went to go follow him around, man, in Houston.
I'm going to find him, and he's going to take me in. That was his plan, but that didn't work out.
Him and Loretta Lynn, right?
But when he got back home.
Or Emmylou.
It was him and Emmylou. Emmylou. He figured school was not for him, so he dropped out at 16. Moved to Nashville. Worked a bunch of crappy jobs. Playing live music at night around town. And he played.
He looks like a middle school, high school linebacker. He has that body.
He's girthy.
He's got the body of like a, you know, a good sophomore team, you know, inside linebacker with the mullet coming out of the back of the helmet in Texas.
And he's got a big fat face.
Oh, yeah.
As well. He played in Guy Clark's band.
Tough with the chin strap. Tough on a chin strap.
Certainly.
Going to need the Stenstrom wristband.
Wrote songs for Guy, sang on his albums, and played around town with Clark, with David Allen Cole. With Towns Van Zandt, landed the gig as the staff songwriter at one of the big publishing companies there and made some scratch, but he missed playing live, so he went back to Texas, started a band called The Dukes. But that fell out, so back to Nashville to the songwriting grind. This time, he started performing, and a couple of his songs turned into country hits for Carl Perkins. Big break came with a 7-record deal as an artist, not as a songwriter, with MCA. And his first release was a big hit. Guitar Town went top 10, follow-up. Also did well. Subsequent releases, though, did not perform as well. And, well, what does that do after your debut album does great? Because you've had your whole life to write it, and then you got 8 months to write the follow-up, and it fails miserably. Heroin. Lots and lots of heroin. Fell out of the public eye for about 4 years, but thankfully was able to get cleaned up. And got a bunch of his songs recorded once again before he started performing. Travis Tritt, Robert Earl King. All had hits with Steve Earle's songs. But his big return was Train A-Comin'. And he won the Grammy in 96. Follow-up, El Corazon.
Yeah, that was a good album.
That was the big one. Because that was kind of the indie rock, country rock that made waves in the college record and college radio scene.
That has the Fort Worth Blues on it.
It's
a Towns Van Zandt, about Towns Van Zandt song.
That was his biggest record, and I think that was the first he had on Warner Brothers, and they really pushed him a lot harder than MCA ever had, and that was kind of the start of that whole country rock stretch. Still gets after it pretty hard. Still has Earl and the Dukes. They just put out a record, his 17th studio album, did that duets record. We are your Sean Colvin show of record.
Oh, come on.
She and Earl did one in 2016. This is a good one.
Paula Cole, Colvin, all of them.
He was married 7 times.
Yeah, he's had a lot, you know.
Twice to the same woman.
Usually the linebacker doesn't get that many chicks, you know.
So you take advantage of it. His third wife, Carol Ann Hunter, gave birth to his first kid, singer-songwriter Justin Towns Earl. Sadly, just died.
Yes, yeah, just passed away.
Yeah, OD'd. Fourth wife gave him his second son. Fifth wife, no kids, 05. Seventh wife. His third son, but they separated in 2014. So a happy 66.
He slings a lot of poots, just like Andreas Papandreou, the best friend of Vasilis Tsitsanis.
I bet he was able to just sling it and not get married 7 times, though.
Papandreou caused some trouble because he died in his like 80s, and he had a young trophy, 41-year-old, hot, big-nosed Greek wife, and he left her his fortune and the kids and the ex-wives.
Yeah, that'll do it.
I got nothing.
She was a T-I-G-E-R in the sack. What do you want? I'm in my 80s. Just treat me like a teenager.
There's got to be a way to peel it off.
You would like
fairly.
You would like to think.
Steve Earle won't go out like that.
No, I think he'll... Well, I won't say.
Steve Earle will die penniless?
Yes.
Yeah.
Underneath a Vidoc.
But watch him sing the Fort Worth Blues at South by Southwest or Austin back, City Limits. Yes. Very beautiful.
Back when those, back when South by Southwest wasn't taken over by a bunch of tech geeks and became a destination for, well, an undesirable.
No, back when it was for country rock exactly. heroin.
Exactly.
CRH.
Back when you could score heroin on 6th in Congress.
In a baggie. We'll be back, everybody, tomorrow at 3 o'clock. David Vasse coming up next with Dodger Talk. Enjoy your evening.